We hear that man, through evolutionary teaching, has evolved over millions of years. And yet, my understanding of written communications, written artifacts, only go back maybe, in their estimation, what, 12,000 years or 25,000 years at the most.
I don't think anybody would even dare to assert that written things would go back before the Chinese or the Egyptians or maybe the Assyrians or the.
So we're talking 6,000 at the most, 5,000, 6,000.
Not even 5.
So how do they account for the fact that all of a sudden, wham, we've got written precise language 6,000 years ago and nothing before? Do they have any explanation?
Well, what you're saying, Ryan, is really, again, a brilliant. If you want to call it an apologetic or a reason to believe or something that would help people understand that no naturalistic progression would ever explain the sudden emergence and blossoming of all of this intricate communication, both written and oral, multi-languages and so forth, unless there really was a Tower of Babel, which every ancient culture, especially in the Middle East, records a Tower of Babel kind of an incident. Like, it's like a foregone conclusion. We know it happened because it did happen. And it's testified to by multiple societies. But, of course, evolutionists have to completely resist that and say that even languages evolve. When languages have order and consistency and similarities and patterns, I mean, it's like, it's ridiculous.
But yeah, but I mean, we have archaeological records that say we've got language, you know, precise, intricate language 6,000 years ago. Well, if evolution is a fact, which it isn't, then we should see scrawlings and strivings to get to that point. But we don't see anything. All of a sudden, it's very abrupt. I mean, it's so dramatic, and there's no mention of it, no explanation of it, nothing at all. It's just, they just ignore it.
Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Insisted that there is no God. They do not want to acknowledge the reality of God in their thinking, so that God turns them over to reprobate minds. That's what it says in Romans. Okay, number two. Go ahead. Number two.
Yeah, the question is, there's a kind of a theory that before God created human beings, actually a civilization before that had got destroyed, and so there was water as a result. So in Genesis first, at the beginning created water was water before everything else. Is there any thoughts on that?
I'm trying to put together what you're saying. Help me again with this. What's your thought
the question
about
is,
water?
Is any kind of a support of the theory that there was a civilization before the Genesis chapter 1, before the king God created it?
The idea that there was a civilization before Adam.
That's right.
I've run across things where people have surmised that there were civilizations, but it's pretty made up. They don't really have any record of it. They just surmise that it must have been because the earth supposedly is much older than 6,000 years in their estimation. And because man was so advanced up to a period of about the time of the flood, then there must have been a whole sequence of civilizations prior to the flood. There's a tendency among those people to kind of say if they don't acknowledge the flood of the Bible, they will acknowledge maybe multiple types of catastrophic events that were preceded by multiple thousands of years long civilizations. But it's all made up. They don't have anything concrete to get their hands on. The only thing we have is the reality of the artifacts and the constructions of whether it's the written record of the Hebrews or the Assyrians or the Egyptians or the Spanish, I mean the Chinese, not the Spanish, that. Or it'll be then just the word of mouth, basically folklore of many cultures that have passed down, traditions about the flood, traditions about Adam, traditions about the Tower of Babel. But there really isn't anything substantial for this theory. They believe that there were thousands of years. And there's only some that believe that, of course, but but again, it's just to try to accommodate them, their thought that, yeah, there's too much advancement in the earliest peoples for it to have just started by itself. It had to come from something else. And then, of course, the other ways, they say, well, it came from extraterrestrials. So they don't want to acknowledge it came from humans. They acknowledge that they say, well, it had to come from extraterrestrials. Again, that's got no basis in fact either, but they try to find things archaeologically that look like men in spacecraft or men with, you know, helmets on and things like that. And we cover that in the rest of the book and some of the other materials that we have. And there's several things in the books that George mentioned that discuss those things as well. Go ahead, let's take number three. Yeah.
Would you comment on the latest Neanderthal bones, how the evolution of the Neanderthal man has come sort of such a tremendous amount?
Okay, we have a whole 1 hour lecture on that, and so I can't really do that, but I can just say that one of the men that I know is the one, Jack Quazzo, who has done quite a bit of research on Neanderthal skulls, where he's actually researched the skulls and found that they, the way that they've been presented by the secular evolutionary scientists, takes great liberty with the skulls and the jawbones particularly, because he, Jack, as a scientist who is a maxillofacial surgeon, where he actually deals with surgically and, of course, you know, oral surgery, you know, he does that whole thing with, you know, helping people get their teeth straight. He looks at the skulls and the bones and he says, well, the way that they have portrayed them in some of the evolutionary texts is not the way the evidence of the way that the bones fit together. So he said they've been monkeying with things to make it look like something that's more animal-like, more ape-like in its construction. And all the evidence, anyway, regarding Neanderthal, and that's what you asked about, Neanderthal is simply a human that was found buried in the Neander Valley of Germany. And I have a little section in my book about Neanderthal. And there's really nothing there that would substantiate any belief that he was anything other than human. Different, perhaps, in a number of ways. And there have been numbers of Neanderthal skulls that have been found. But about the best thing that I've been able to find in their description of that is that these skulls that were found, and their bones even, were indicative that these were a pretty powerful breed of man. I mean, they were pretty strong, and that maybe, and at least in some cases, the skulls reflected extreme age, and that the longer a person lives, the skull bones actually reflect the change that happens during their lifetime when the muscles of the face, especially chewing, will actually reflect on the structure of the bone. Now that's an interesting thought, because if you start looking at that, when you have a people who, for example, the Eskimo people, who chew on hide, whether it's whale hide or some other kind of fish or something, maybe it's dolphins or sharks or whatever, they chew it just to, basically to prepare to make it into more soft leather than what they would be using for clothing. And when you do that, that chewing action will actually cause the muscles to cause the bone where the muscles are attached to grow and to extend. So you'll see maybe larger ridges, especially around the eye and around the jaw. So you'll see a more powerful kind of structure of the bones. And again, that's just one interesting observation about Neanderthal to suggest what Neanderthal is all about.
I was thinking that it has a bigger brain than us.
So oh, and that's another thing. Yeah, and for those who may or may not know, the adult skulls of Neanderthals actually reflected a larger brain size. That is, the brain case where the brain is was about, I think, up to about 10-15% larger than most average modern humans living today. Which, not that that matters a whole lot, but it seems to be the opposite kind of thing of what you would expect if evolution were true. only because of the way that evolutionists have programmed people to think. The size of the brain really doesn't have anything to do with brain power or, you know, advancement. But some people have that idea. Oh, he's got a big brain, he must be smarter than the rest of them. No, that's baloney. So is there a fourth? No, where's number four? Right there, yeah.
A few years back, Ben Stein did a documentary.
Oh yeah, wasn't it good?
Yes, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Expelled?
Yes. First of all, I wonder if you could, actually, I have two questions. Number one, I'd like you to comment on that, whether you think any of that is true. And my second question, which is not pertaining to the subject that you just lectured on, I was wondering your opinion on whether creation would allow for the existence of sentient life outside of this planet.
What kind of what?
Sentient life, intelligent life apart from this planet.
Okay, first question. Ben Stein, who is a Jewish actor and commentator, brilliant guy, produced a movie a few years ago, and I don't know, do you have that video?
I was out with a friend, and I forgot
that. Yes, we have for sale.
Yeah. So if you want to get that video from Creation Science Association here, do get that. It's really good. It's worth showing in your churches and in schools and so forth. I would strongly encourage. It's called
Expelled.
And it is very good. I mean, it basically brings out a lot of information by his interviews with people. It's very telling. I mean, it really helps us to realize that there's a lot of covering up going on among the evolutionists. They don't even want to acknowledge publicly what they secretly talk about among themselves. They don't have any answers. It's ridiculous. Right here on this page, your second question was about extraterrestrials. So we've covered that in as brief a space as I was able to possibly put it. And I think if you look at that, I would encourage you to get some real basic bullet points about the total impossibility for there ever to be extraterrestrials. Let me give you a quick synopsis. Extraterrestrials, or life in outer space, brings us to two different observations. God created, we understand that He created spiritual beings that were invisible like angels, as well as physical beings that were visible like men. When you're contemplating the area of angels, you realize that there, biblically at least, there was the fall of a third of the heavenly host. So there's two kinds of angels now. There's good angels and there's demonic angels. In a way, you could call those extraterrestrials because they even are at the throne of God, which is in the highest heaven. But then if you think about extraterrestrials the way that most people conceive of them, we're thinking about some kind of a physical being, some kind of a being that actually is sort of like man or animals or some kind of a created, you know, physical, biological life form, but living way out there in space somewhere. So if that were the case, the question is, where would they live? When I was a kid, we had, what was it called, Buck Rogers? And that might have persuaded some people to think that there might be life on Mars or something like that. But we know that's not possible. Of course, there's no life possible on the planets of our solar system. So that means we've got to go beyond our solar system. Where would be the nearest possible place beyond your solar system that life could occur? Well, it would have to be on a terrestrial planet like our Earth, but it would have to be maybe around some star that's similar to our Sun. Well, the nearest star is 4.5 light years away. The nearest star, 4.5 light years away. And that's a pretty reasonable understanding of how far it really is. Now, regardless of what you think about how far the stars are away, and some of them are, you know, supposedly thousands upon thousands, if not millions of light years away, that's so far, it's just ridiculous. But if you just consider the nearest star, and I like to think of it this way, If there was an alien, an inner, you know, extraterrestrial being that you could somehow think ever came to the Earth or interacted with humans in the past or in the present or whatever, if there was such a thing, if he did come from the nearest star, it's a star. It's a big bag of hot gas. There's no planet there. Regardless of what you think about their planets maybe existing somewhere way out, the nearest star is 4.5 light years away. How far is that? Light travels today at 186,282 miles per second. That's 7 times around the Earth in 1 second. At 4.5 light years, if you could go 1,000,000 miles an hour, that's pretty fast. If you could go 1,000,000 miles an hour, it would take you from the nearest star to here, it would take you 3,000 years to get here. If you left in the days of King David, 3,000 years ago, you'd just be arriving tonight. You see, the idea of there being an extraterrestrial that came here and interacted with humans is so absurdly ridiculous. And people haven't even thought of it, and yet people still have. Well, couldn't God create extraterrestrials? Yeah, he could, but there's some problems with that. Biblically, again, if you're going to be a Bible believer, then you have to recognize the whole span of creation is described in the Bible, and that God created everything that he had made, in the heavens, in the sea, in the earth, everything, in 6 normal days. And that because of man's sin, man, through his sin, caused God to bring the curse, the groaning, the travailing of all of creation on everything because of man's sin. And in that, the redemption of man, the redemption of the creation, is built around one person, namely the Redeemer, that Job talked about 4,000 years ago. The Redeemer, being the Son of God, then, is the Redeemer of the entire creation. The Redeemer is described as being the one who was bruised, who was stricken for our iniquities, once for all. Are you getting the point? How could it happen somewhere else too? Because the whole creation has to be redeemed. But then they would have to get the message from the earth, because it happened once. You run into some real problems theologically and biblically, to try to suggest that there must be another Redeemer for another creation in another place that we really don't know anything about, but because we believe that, well, God must have done it. I'd rather believe what God said than make up something that he didn't say and try to figure out some gymnastic way to make it all fit together. It doesn't make any sense. And I just threw that out there for you to maybe kind of start thinking about it, because when people start that, somebody came up to one of the meetings the other day and said, well, couldn't God have, you know, created some extraterrestrials out there? He could have, but it creates some real problems, and there's no indication that he ever did in the scriptures. So please, don't try to make God say something that he never said. It'll just get you into nothing but trouble. And it makes it more confusing. And let's face it, we humans are confused enough as it is. Let's not add to the confusion. Very, very good question. And yes, sir.
Just before you go to the next question, just with regards to Excel.
Did he get a number?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but he's off the charts with number 5. So.
I'll turn that, but I just thought, because Excel says, I was watching something on the internet the other day.
Yeah.
Where there is a conversation between Ben Stein and R.C. Sproul on that movie. 3 segments on YouTube, and they are worth listening to.
Oh, fantastic.
R.C. Sproul, when it comes reference to creation is pretty good.
Yeah, he is.
And so it's well worth listening to.
Yeah, good. I'll look that up. Thanks, Dave, for mentioning that. Good. Any other questions, George? Did you want to?
There was a fifth one.
Was there a fifth one? Oh, you got another one?
Well, I just comment. Like, when people talk about extraterrestrials, I like to go back to, you know, the first verse of the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You know, the heavens is one part of the creation, and then there's the earth. The earth is a special creation with life and mankind. And when he mentions the stars, I forget what date it is. He made the stars also.
Also, it's just
obvious. It's just an afterthought.
Yeah.
The earth is the key of all of creation. Yeah. There is no other special creation other than the earth.
That's right.
Very simple.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Good. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, I'm teaching young people in the church. Can you maybe just help me how to teach them that God is omnipresent? What is your way of teaching that?
God is omnipresent. Now, I'm glad you brought that up because I think about that. So many of the things, because of our technological computer age, we have the opportunity to start thinking about God in some rather refreshingly new ways. We used to wonder, and this subject of omnipresence also has to do with omniscience. How can God know everything about everybody through all time, instantaneously, all at once? And we think about the computer. With one little computer chip that keeps getting smaller and smaller in terms of microtechnology, we can put immense amounts of information into a small space. DNA is doing that very thing in just a tiny, tiny place on a cell, or on basically a molecule within a cell, DNA. So I think God is his omniscience and his omnipresence is that technological. It doesn't matter about size. Size is irrelevant because we're talking about God who is all places at all times, and his knowledge is that overarching, that overwhelming. It covers everything all the time. So we think that we're limited in time and in spatial dimensions. We think of width and height and depth, but the Bible mentions breadth and depth and width and height. So there's another dimension, not just three dimensions, there's a fourth dimension, and there's a number of things. We won't talk dimensions, we're talking about actually multiple dimensions. Talk about the third heaven, talk about different aspects of the Spirit of God, and you begin to realize God is outside of the created universe. Can't put it in this little box. God's not like the Wizard of Oz behind some curtain somewhere. God is the Creator, and he manifested himself in Jesus to be able to give us a way of identifying with him. And Jesus said, there isn't anything that I do that I didn't see the Father do. So he's walking and talking in the wisdom of God, and he laid down his eternal glory so that he can walk into human experience and give us a little kind of a concept of the fact that God really created us, redeemed us, loves us, wants fellowship with us. And I say, God, you are so awesome. How can I do anything but want to seek you? To know you. And just the very thought of it arouses something deep in me to say, God, we're going to spend eternity with you. We can start that relationship right now if we just receive the love of the truth, the love of his redemption in Jesus, and that we can begin to allow his Holy Spirit to guide us into all of the truth. I mean, such knowledge is too awesome. Just like the psalmist said, God, such knowledge, whether I go to the highest heaven or the deepest sea, such knowledge about what you know about. You know every word that is in my mind before I ever speak it. God. And that's the God, the real God, the only God. All the other gods are just idols. They're just meaningless ideas in people's minds. There are no gods. There's only one God. And that's the God that we have the privilege of serving and introducing other people to. And then when people argue, they say, well, why should we believe in your God? And we forget all that stuff. I say, okay, talk to God about it. Just go in the quietness of your own privacy and talk to God about it. And ask God, God, if you are there, reveal yourself to me. And I suggest that if anybody has ever done that, that is one prayer that he will never turn down. And so I would just say, ask God to reveal himself to you. And then seek him with all your heart. And be serious about your seeking. Because I like to tell people, the scripture says very clearly that those who come to God must believe that he is. And he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. When you seek the Lord with all of your heart, you will find him, the prophet Jeremiah said. All of your heart and wholeheartedly. I think altogether too often in our churches today, we don't encourage people to seek the Lord with all their heart. Well, come on to church. No, it's to seek God with all your heart. Do business with God until you know that you know that you know that God is very present. A help to those who call on him. That's the God we serve. I think we should maybe be a little bit more challenging to those around us to seek God with all their heart.